Thank you. Meeting organizer. For inviting me here to speak. Today, my talk is a little bit different from what going on here about the cardiac dynamics, but more or less related. I will talk about the calcium pulse using non-excitable cell, so it's not the sparks. I will talk to mainly two parts. One is the experimental, experimental data for part with triggering rate. And then the second part is computational simulation, trying to simulate the triggered parts. So suppose this is a cell, and the red dot is the calcium, and typically in cytosol space, the calcium concentration is low, and on the cell membrane, there are some calcium channels. The calcium can get into the cytosol, but today I will not discuss this part. I will focus on the non-excitable cell, the calcium released from ER4. We know that on the ER membrane, we have some IP3 channel. How IP3 channel works, on the cell membrane there are some proteins, and if they bind some protein, some agonist, then it can release the IP3, generate some IP3 messenger here, and IP3 diffuse and some bind to the channel, and if the some calcium also binds here, and then the channel will become open, right? And the local calcium concentration becomes quite high. Sometimes 100 micromolar, and with the high calcium concentration, the calcium can one more bind the channel and close the channel, and at the same time, on this cell membrane or on ER membrane, we have some pump dynamics and then pump back the calcium outside or inside the ER. And so in this case, we can see the calcium concentration become high and low. And how we visualize the cytosolic calcium, we use some fluorescence dye.
If the calcium bound to the fluorescence dye, then it will turn the blue light to green light. By detecting the strength of the green light, you can say more or less how about the calcium concentration high or low. And I will show you some experiment data. Here, this is a spreading wave. You can see the wave from this side, calcium from this side, spread to this side. And here is a spiral wave. How about this spreading dynamics? We have mathematically we have these terms. The important terms include the diffusing term and there are some buffers, calcium buffers, and the bind and unbinding reaction. In term this is, and we also have the IP3 channel release term, and so the calcium can, this is a source term, calcium can release from the ER pool and bump back into the ER. Now this is a cartoon and show. First, suppose this channel open stochastically and calcium diffuse to the cytosol space, the calcium release out and bind to the nearby cell. nearby channel, and the channel may become open. But with this channel open, and the calcium concentration here become high, and the calcium concentration, because the high calcium concentration inhibits the channel, so you can say this channel may inhibit it, but this side the channel keep open and release more calcium, but this side inhibited, and then you can say the wave spreading. And now, in order to simulate the calcium propagation, here a critical term is a J current, J channel. The question is, calcium release dynamics spatially homogeneously? At the beginning, people model the calcium propagation with a spatially homogeneous distributed channel distribution, and then later on with experiments show that the NACL channels are not homogeneously distributed. This is a wave. Before the wave initiated, you can see some paths, locally here and somewhere here, and then occasionally a big path can trigger a wave.
And that's experimental?
This experiment, yes.
From which cells?
This all I'm talking about is the Wurzai.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Frog egg. Is it 3D propagation?
This 2D, I think this is a 2D, and then they constructed in 3D movie.
Oh, I understand, but
this is
confocal.
Confocal.
I'm looking at one slice, but
it's
like three-dimensional.
And the confocal, 3D scan confocal, or 2D scan confocal,
yeah,
2D.
It's a plane.
I understand
that's
a plane, but
yes.
Is it a three-dimensional phenomenon?
No, the scan can focus to one plane and shift.
Okay, people go deeper. Do you see the same thing or it's nothing?
Okay, if you go deeper, then the signal become weak. But you can more or less say the similar, right? The high calcium is only observed around the close to the ER membrane. You have to focus on the ER membrane. Far from the ER membrane, you can also, if there is a wave, you can see some signal, but if you only take some bleep, then you cannot see anything.
But where is it? So you have a plasma lemma and
yeah.
ER membrane.
Oh, and the ER membrane is two or three micrometer down the cell membrane. Yeah, and it's quite irregular. It's a kind of network or something like that. Quite irregular, right?
And how thick this layer of
the CR? I don't know. Sorry. Okay, so the behind this a triggered wave, the dynamics is like this. We think this is an ER membrane, this is an ER pool, and this is an IP3 channel. The channels are distributed in clusters. And if we have a low IP3 stimuli, and also in the experiment, you have to add enough EGTA buffer to block the coupling between nearby clusters, then you can see some this experiment data, you can see the local calcium release, and this is time and this is space, the confocal scan, this is a confocal line scan. And if you use a high IP3 stimulus, then you can see the cluster, the coupled, the calcium release can be coupled, and then suppose this cluster release the calcium can trigger here and then trigger the nearby cluster to release more calcium, and then you can see the wave. This wave is somehow we call the saturated wave. And then, sorry, Now, we recently with the improved microscopy, we can see the fine structure underlying calcium paths. This is the path. And this is a path peak. And before you initiate a path, you can see there is a trigger event. Yeah, this is a trigger event. So if we see the control profile at this point, and then there is a trigger event, then trigger a path. So we can see more. In the experiment, we typically define the two groups of the paths. One is typically with a trigger event, and 40% and more, about 60% paths without any trigger.
Go up and then down and then up again?
Where? Here?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No, you see here, you see this one and this one. Yeah. Okay, in the experiment, if you check the resting state, they have some fluctuation naturally, right? But before, you can see this event is clearly higher than the fluctuation. And one thing is that maybe there is a selection, right? You select here the calcium signal is stochastic up and down. If you choose all the up events, and then you average it, you typically say the you can define there is a trigger event. But however, if we average all this path with or without trigger event, and then you still see a mean trigger event here. So there is evidence that show it's not a random. If it's random, then you average all the paths, then there should be no event, right up and down the negative positive. So but what we average all the path, and then we should for sure to say a trigger here.
Sorry, I don't understand what two types of paths you have in detection.
Okay,
one of them induced rate, another doesn't induce rate. I have seen one below threshold, another above threshold. So there is an inhibition.
The path, we say this is a small fine structure for the path, right? Before this is a path pattern.
Look at the red on your reference to the left.
Okay, this is the left. This is we think this is path. This is not wave. This is path.
Yeah, what is red?
And the red is a trigger event. Trigger. How the path is initiated?
Red to the right. To the right reference.
What?
The right at 60%, there is no red.
That's right.
So what is it?
This is also the path. But in the experiment with the similar set, that we did not see this trigger event in the experiment. It's just random, just you see a path rising.
I don't understand. Peter, could you explain?
I think what they want to see is some event where a smaller number of channels opens stochastically, which subsequently kind of trigger off the whole cluster going up.
That's right.
So in some parts you see...
There's a different mechanism, just you do not see.
That's the question. What is
this? Okay, this is an experiment. That's right. There's why the path only show all along trigger or no trigger. We are still possible for us. Yeah, and now we more or less we have an idea how to explain the trigger event. We think the path is maybe initiated by one channel open. This one channel open is a trigger event, and then so it means with 40%, you can say first the one channel open, and then you this one channel release the calcium. The release the calcium can trigger.
What is the definition of bleep?
Okay, sorry. Yeah, the bleep is one channel open and event.
And puff.
A puff is a clustered channel calcium release. Okay, sorry. I think you should, the puff is somehow in the excitable cell. It's called a sparks, right? But in if the we say the calcium release from the local or the local calcium release in non-excitable cell from ER pool, it's called a puff. Anyway, there are a lot of names, but basically it's called it's a local calcium release. And so the question is how large the cluster is, how many channels inside each cluster, and how about the channel current, and how many channels open, how do you have path. This is basic question for us to know, because calcium wave is built up by the path release, right? And from the experiment, if you go back here and then you say the closest two paths, then you can more or less know how about the cluster two nearby cluster distance, and it's easy, right? And but the difficult problem question is how large the cluster is and how many channels corresponding to a path. So
what is the difference between trigger and bleep?
Trigger is bleep.
Trigger is a bleep?
But not always.
Yeah, we think. Okay, before they have two.
It just means a blip is one
that's
channel.
Right.
All those channels are gating stochastically all the time. So it's a non-zero probability that any channel will open at any moment. If it does, it can act as a trigger to cause a pop.
Okay, great. We are happy. Anyway, okay, so before, currently many people believe that each cluster contains 20 to 40 channels, and with a size of about 200 nanometer, during the path release, there are a few, maybe 6 or less than 10 channels open. And the current is about 0.1. My simulation study is based on this experiment, the path triggered a path experiment, try to recheck this conclusion. And our model suggests a totally different result. Okay, this is a detail of the experiment. So here we discuss the duration profile. This is a full path. The IP3 is released by the UV flash release. UV flash release the IP3, and the trigger duration is from here to here. This is a trigger duration defined as this. This is a distribution, and the mean duration is 12. And from here to here, we define the path rising, and the mean rising time is 19 milliseconds.
Wait, can I just ask one thing? So when you say a blip, the blip is the calcium signal.
That's right.
So are you saying that this is calcium
released
through the IP3 receptor?
Yes, it's all IP3 receptor.
Right, but being gated exclusively by calcium? Or there's IP, then this, not the filtered glass strength, which is IP3 concentration?
Which you are, this one?
The x-axis here on the first.
This is IP3 concentration. How IP3 concentration generated in the experiment. We use the caged IP3 messenger, and the caged IP3 messenger are released by the UV flashlight. And then you use a strong UV flash light, then you release more IP3 concentration. So this is a relative flash strength, but it represents the...
So you're using IP3 to initiate a blip?
That's right. The channel open, the IP3 channel open is to be depend on both the IP3 messenger and also the calcium, right? So you need both. You need the calcium ion and also IP3. That's right.
You have some concentration of IP3 that you're releasing with the pulse. And then that, and if there's a little
pulsing
around, you can get
first.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
You need that
sensitized channel. Nice. That's right. And with this flash strength, the IP3 concentration is more or less constant within a few seconds. Yeah.
You can engage IP3 inside the cell.
That's right. Yes. They use caged IP3 and inject into the cytosol. Yeah, they injected. Yeah.
Perhaps you've said this already and I missed it, but do you have any sort of cooperativity between the channels in one cluster, or are they all independent?
They are independent, but once one channel open, then the channel can release calcium, right? The calcium can bind to the nearby channel to open the nearby channel, right?
It's not a direct
What's missed, right?
It's a cooperativity.
I think the channels, they are independent.
In your model, they are independent?
Here I did not talk about the model. Yeah, in my model, that I did not talk about the model. Yeah, this is an experiment. Yeah.
So the implication is that the trigger is a trigger, so it's causing the pump.
Okay.
But you've got pumps without triggers.
Yes.
So you need to worry about your spatial distribution of the IP3 and the fact that this initial trigger was really an aborted event, and the IP3 concentration then changes over the next several milliseconds, and then you get the filament.
Wait, okay, sorry.
I'm just wondering if the trigger is just an association, it's not a causal event. In other words, you get some aborted calcium release, but then as the IP3 concentration changes in the vicinity of your cluster, then you get the full release. Mm-hmm. And it's not really, that initial response is not triggering the full release, it's just a certain probability that that's going to happen.
How to explain this, right? I think the experiment, what we did is that at the beginning we have we inject the caged IP3, and then suppose here we use a UV flash and then to release the IP3 messenger, and for a few seconds duration, the IP3 concentration is constant in the cytosol, more or less. They decay but slowly. But I think their decay rate is more than a few seconds. So we think within a short time interval, the IP3 is constant. So we don't care about the IP3 here, right? Then this one, how do you explain this is that one channel open, that's a problem, but we have some argument. Suppose this should be some channels open, right? But if you think this is two channels open, then if you consider the channel open, they are independently. So you consider the open probability, one channel open probability is much larger than the two channel open simultaneously, right? So more or less, maybe some trigger event two channels open simultaneously, but with a large probability, you should think it's one channel open.
Okay, but if I look in the no trigger records, two top ones, it looks like there was a trigger event, but it didn't lead to anything in both those records. If you go back to the left a little bit. No,
let's go to the top trace.
50 milliseconds before the rise of the calcium transient.
Here.
Down below.
No, 60%.
Right there, that's being down.
This one.
And immediately below that.
Yes, yes. And
why didn't that trigger something?
Somehow this you may think there is a in experiment they think maybe this is a bleep. Why bleep? Why we say trigger and they bleep before people say okay one channel open is a bleep and they cluster the channel open is a puff, right? And here this experiment we say okay before the puff initiated there is a trigger. This trigger is one channel open, so we say it's a bleep trigger event. That's why we have so complex lab. And this may be it's maybe a one channel open, but we did not count this in this group. We just if we see the calcium increase and then followed by the puff rising, then we say this is a trigger event. You can say this is a bleep, but we did not count this guy as a trigger event. Just the when we choose that arbitrarily. Yeah. It's quite fast. I think for IP3, if I'm correct, I compare calcium, free calcium diffusing is 200 micrometer per second. Now I think if I'm correct, IP3 they said is 500. Yeah, so much faster than free calcium.
What is that?
500, I think, if I'm correct.
I think it's still
much faster.
Okay. I think
it's about the same accounts in the range of 200
micrometers. Uh-huh.
Okay. But
it's big.
Yeah. Like people can count, it's not sharp. Okay. That's right. Sure. Yes. Maybe I think my memory is. Yes. It's too big. Okay. And then we continue. To the puff profile, this is we call the amplitude is detect the peak here and the peak here. We for the trigger we have 1.4 and the mean for the puff is 7. So here, and then if we have another measurement, it's a weight. This is special. Sensitive, huh? Okay. This is space, and that is spatial at the peak, the spatial distribution, and then you can define the weights as the four weights at half maximum. So this distribution average is 0.6 micrometer, and for puff is 1.5 micrometer. And this this summary. This average the puff. The data is you can see a trigger, right? This is enlarged part, and this is summary of the experiment data. We have the average the trigger duration and their spatial weights and peak, and for also same for the puff. Now for our modeling, we use this trigger peak as a yardstick to measure the puff peak. So the peak ratio is about 6. Now, first we consider stochastic channel dynamics during puff. Suppose there is a clustered channels, and this is a average temporal profile for the confocal singular. And then maybe here this is only one channel open, it's stochastically open close, right? And at this moment more channels be triggered, so release then you observe a path release. So this is quite complex. And right now we think first.
I don't understand though, because the trigger channel is going to be in some steady state open probability. So why would it start at time 20, for example?
Oh, here we saw the confocal singular increase. So we think the channel open more or less start from here, right? This is average the data.
Events would have been occurring throughout the whole time, right?
Yes.
It's just what happens to occur.
Yes, so in the experiment you have IP3, it releases someone here, and then you run your...
If you average over many channels, then
okay.
You won't have a constant, you won't have...
Oh, sorry, the average is that. That's right, you line up, we line up this, okay, sorry. And we line up the from here, from the end of the trigger event. Yeah, we line up all this stuff at this point. At this point, so you can we then can define a mean trigger and a mean path, right? We line up at this point at the initiation of the path rising. You got it? And in the experiment, you can say the path initiated at different time, right? But once you get this straight, you get this profile, or then you line up at this point, and then you get average. You can do that. So suppose here you in your experiment you always find the path this kind of shape, and then here this at the end of the trigger event, or you line up all these paths, and then you get average the path. That's what we did here, and then we get this. Now then we try to simulate it. This may be what's really going on for a real path, but this is too complex. So we consider a deterministic approach. This means first this is a cluster and randomly distributed some IP3 receptor channels, right? And first the low channel open, and then during this time, we think, okay, there is one channel open, and the channel is at the center of the cluster. They constantly keep open for 12 milliseconds. And then we think, okay, we ignore the stochastic stuff. We think maybe some channels, they open from here to here constantly, keep open, and then this we call the path rising duration. All this channel open, and finally we have our goal is find out how many channels open corresponding to a path, and how about the cluster size. In our simulation, we also distribute the channels homogeneously. So this is a model design. We have three dimensions, and this is cytosol space. Here, this in this space we have free calcium immobile buffer and EGTA buffer, and this is a fluorescent star. And then at the center, we distribute, we treat the ER pool as two dimensions, volumeless. And so there we have distributed some certain number of channels in two dimensions, and our goal is try to figure out the L and the N, and this is our equation, right? diffusion term and the binding unbinding term and also the channel term. And okay, finally we here I first show you the standard model and the result. First, we have central channel open with current 0.4 picoampere and open for 12. And then we have 25 channels open. Their length is scattered in a distance 520 millinanometer. And then, okay, this is simulation data. And this, at the end of this channel open, this free calcium distribution and fluorophore, the dye distribution, a spatial distribution. This is channel. This is central channel here, their position. And then we have 25 channels open. Then along this line, this is distribution along this line for free calcium and for fluorophore. You can see the free calcium, they have a crown structure, but the fluorescence calcium somehow got quite smooth curve. And in the experiment, we did not really see the fluorophore dye, but we use confocal imaging. So here we simulate, suppose this is a confocal or scan with space, and for each dot, how we get it? It scales the light, the fluorescence strings for around a certain small area. This area is more like American football, and the mathematical equation like this. So once we know the fluorescence calcium distribution, and then we can calculate the confocal image. And what we get is here, this is a path, and this there is a trigger, one channel open, and a path. So this is the confocal imaging. As observed in the experiment, the trigger event is 0.6 micrometer, and the width for path is 1.5. And this is your temporal profile. Now, I show you the detail for the free calcium and the fluorophore and the confocal signal. So this is the temporal profile, this is the width, free calcium, fluorophore and confocal. The interesting observation is that the free calcium is quite different from what we observed. This is really a confocal signal. So the confocal signal show a slow up and down, but the free calcium up and down fast. And you can also say the free calcium they are quite local. Even the during the one channel release or a cluster the channel release, but the what we observed from confocal is quite large. So I think when in our modeling, when we try to simulate the calcium, then typically you have to when you my point is that from this figure you don't think what you observed in the experiment is a real free calcium distribution. So they are different.
A question regarding this confocal signal: did you use Plainsberg function for the lens, and you didn't look at the scattering? Or you did some Monte Carlo? How did you actually simulate this confocal signal?
Confocal signal, I use this. This is a fluorophore, and then this represents how the confocal map.
Okay.
So it means. For in confocal you have this is the each image pixel, right? And then this each one you confocal in this point. This point is not an ideal point. It's actually an American football, right?
But this is postulated, this, you didn't actually measure this function.
Oh, they measured this function. In the experiment, they measure this function and they have some certain value for lambda x, lambda y, lambda z. And then I put those numbers in the model and okay, so we discuss the open channel effect. We really don't know how many channels are open during a path, right? So we change the open channel number and compare the path widths and the amplitude ratio and say this is a mean experiment data for widths and for amplitude ratio. And then for our standard, the length is 500, it's like this. And this data suggests that the optimal open channel somehow reasonable in order to reproduce the experiment data is about 20 to 35. This region is somehow reasonable for the real, maybe biologically realistic open channel. And then we also change our cluster length, and from quite tight, all the channel almost all the channel located in 40 nanometer, and also quite distributed in 1 micrometer size. And we also go based on compare to the to the experimental data, we have the optimal cluster length is about 300 to 800 nanometer. Another unknown parameter is a current, and we also change the current and say how the current change the current. Then we change the widths and the amplitude ratio. This data suggests that the possible biologically realistic current should be about 0.3 and 0.5. You say all these results are different from what people thought before. Before it's 0.1 and the length is less than 200, but here we think it's bigger than 300, and the open channel number, they think it's only a few, less than 10, but we think it's about 20 to 35. And okay, this slide I show how the mobile buffer change the path. This is somehow trivial, right? If you increase the buffer, then you decrease the widths, the path widths, but had in this region has little effect on the belief, and the peak ratio is increased because here this path decreases more for the peak. Okay, before we got only one line scan. Here we define a matching degree. So this is the average experimental data. This is the peak ratio and this is the path width. And then in our model, we change the cluster length and also change the open channel number. And then we got for each cluster length and the open channel number, we have a path, right? We can measure their path ratio, their amplitude ratio and the path widths, and then we can calculate a matching degree for each one, and we think if it's close to experimental data, and then we give a red color. If it's out of this region, then we think it's black. And this is a final result. So it means with channel 0.4 peak amp, the optimal data match to the experiment is in this area.
So here we can also change the current, decrease the current or increase current. Sorry. Almost stop. Yeah. Almost done, sorry. Yes, sorry, we're almost done. Here. Yes. This is a summary. So here we have the summary and the experiment and the model. And with the model, based on this, we have this result and our conclusion is different from previous people saying this is people previous saying this is our new result. Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. To do the lack of time, we should have to move on.